If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
When I'm working with people, it's not transactional. I really am trying to find a way to have a relationship with them so that everyone wants to keep working together again and again and again and again and again. And it's very long-term thinking.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Monique Holm is the founder of Real Estate Investor Goddesses. Her mission is to assist 1 million women to achieve financial freedom through real estate. She is a real estate investor, syndicator, and developer with over 15 years of real estate investing experience in multifamily, industrial, mobile home parks, RV parks, flipping, and vacation rentals. Together with her husband, Peter Holm, and her investors, she owns over 1,300 rental units across 10 states. Monique, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Sam.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. I mean, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on. Where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So how did I start in syndication?
Or in real estate in general?
Yeah. Completely by accident, honestly. I'm a first generation American. My parents are from Haiti. Growing up, they're always like, Monique, you can be anything you want, but in parentheses, as long as you're a doctor, lawyer, professor, engineer. That was success. That's what they knew. And sure. I was a dutiful daughter and a pretty good student. So I ended up doing the law route of those choices. And I became a lawyer. Hated being a lawyer, but that's a whole other topic for maybe a different show. The only thing I learned about real estate is that you should buy your own home. Mm-hmm. And so at one point, I was like, well, I've been practicing a few years. I guess I should buy a home. But I live in Los Angeles, which is a super expensive market, and I couldn't afford anything. So even though I was making six figures, this was even back in 2005, a starter home in a semi-decent neighborhood, not talking mansions in Bel Air or Beverly Hills, just a neighborhood where you're not going to have a drive-by shooting kind of thing. It's like we're looking at upwards of $600,000, $700,000. So a friend of mine who was in a similar boat suggested we buy a duplex together. The original idea was I'd live on one side, he'd live on the other side, since I could afford half a house. You know, I thought, okay, let's do that. But instead, we ended up finding this old craftsman that had a large unit downstairs, a two-bedroom upstairs, a converted garage in the back. So we each took a bedroom in one unit, rented out the upstairs, rented out the back house, rented out our basement. And it's like, oh, I didn't know house hacking was a thing, but just kind of fell into it. Like, this is awesome. These people are paying my mortgage. It's great. And then when I met my husband, he had a duplex. And then after the crash and things were on sale, houses were on sale, properties were on sale after like 2008, 2009, we started to flip houses. And we were doing that until about 2015, when houses were not so on sale. And it was getting very competitive. And flipping is definitely a job, very active. You know, you do it short term, you get some money, hopefully. Knock on wood, on that side, we never lost money. But I was like, I want to buy and hold. I want something more passive. I just want to put in tenants and get paid.
Yeah.
And so we started looking for a fourplex, which was the biggest thing I could imagine at that time. And nothing in LA made any financial sense. And it was at that point that I was introduced to somebody who, it was a game-changing conversation. I don't know if you ever had one of those conversations where it's like,
yep,
you're like ready and then like the perfect person shows up and it's like complete paradigm shifts.
Yeah.
So I was introduced to a mutual friend, to a man named Robert Helms, who's the host of the Real Estate Guys radio podcast show. And he's, you know, our mutual friend had said, oh yeah, my friend Robert's going to be in town tomorrow night. He's going to be in LA. Should come meet him. He's done like hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate. Our mutual friend knew that I was frustrated, like trying to find this fourplex, trying to, you know, flipping. And he's like, yeah, come, maybe he'll have some ideas for you. So I go out to dinner with him, and 10 minutes, he's like, changed my life. So he was asking what I was up to. I was telling him about the flipping and how it's hard to find deals, and then the fourplex. And he said, you know, LA is a tough market. I always say, live where you want to live, invest where the numbers make sense. And You're nodding because that makes sense. And it makes sense when you hear it, but until he said that, I just assumed you had to invest where you could live, where you could drive to your property, touch it, self-manage it. It didn't occur to me that I could invest outside of Los Angeles. And LA is so expensive and also super tenant friendly. It's kind of a horrible place to be a landlord and invest. So I was like, oh, right. So it literally opened up the world to me. And the next thing he said was, and you can buy that fourplex, but you're limited your own credit, capital and credit. So alternatively, you could bring a group of investors together. You can get 100 or 200 units. And he started explaining that to me. I think my head like exploded when he said that. I was like, that's a thing? Until he said that, I literally thought that you had to be a billionaire to do that kind of.
Right.
It never crossed my mind that real people could do that. But when he said it was like I had this like whole body, I think I got chills. My whole body was like, yes, yes, right. I want to do that. Like what you're talking about. I was so excited. I loved that idea. And I went home, told my husband that night. He's like, oh my God, there's this thing. It's called syndication. You bring groups of investors together. And then we're going to learn how to do that. So that was October 2015. We signed up that night for a syndication seminar for January of 2016. We were there. We signed up for their mastermind, their high-end mastermind. We signed up for another group to learn about apartment investing. And then in that year, it was through hustle and grace, we got over 1,000 doors in 2016 through syndication. So we syndicated 3 deals that year. We passively invested in 2, and then we've just been going since.
That's amazing. Like that's explosive growth. I mean, and that doesn't happen without what I think you just called it, hustle and grind.
And grace. And grace. Grace of God. So
there's that as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of grace in that process.
I'm sure. I'm curious what so today, looking back at your bio, now you are a developer, you have multifamily, industrial, mobile home parks, RV parks, flipping. Is all of this on the active side or is some of that on the limited partner side? Walk us through what your business looks like today.
Yeah. So over the years, we've gotten to try a lot of different types of real estate. And what we mostly do right now is we are more on the money side. So I have a lot of investors and we partner with different operators. So we're on the sponsorship team, but more on the money side. So what's nice about that is it allows more breadth of asset class and market. So we can be a little more spread out. We don't have to go as deep as we would if we were operating.
Right. Okay. And that is fun because it exposes you to a variety of different asset classes like we just talked about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's awesome. So what are some of the things, as you can rewind the tape a bit, maybe that you feel like you have done right as you have vetted and grown the sponsorship teams that you work alongside?
Yeah, I think what I've done right is I have a people first philosophy for real estate investing. So everything for me is about partners, and also I have a relationships for life philosophy. So when I'm working with people, it's not transactional. I really am trying to find a way to have a relationship with them so that everyone wants to keep working together again and again and again and again and again. And it's very long-term thinking. So I work that way. I want people who work with me to be that way too. I don't want to be the one that's like, okay, I'm going to give and so we can work together forever. And they're transactional. So I'm also looking at that, how they show up, because we are money side and it's all about like our partners on the sponsorship side, but also thinking about my partners that are our partner investors. Like, how can I do my best for them? So I think that showing up in that way has really helped create opportunities and open them up. Also, one of the things that I've learned that has made a big difference is I look for the 3 C's. One of my mentors, Beth Clifford, taught me this. So the first C is character. So what kind of person is it? Like, how of integrity are they? It's not something that can be taught. And when somebody shows you who they are, I believe them the first time. So I really look at, somebody's character and then their commitment. And commitment for me means commitment to the project that we're working on. So, and that's for everybody I work with. So if I have a contractor that's, in theory, they're supposed to be at my job, but then they have six other things that they're doing and they're not very committed, that does not work. But you know, similarly, everyone that I work with has to be committed to the project, but also committed to our mutual values. So I only want to invest where I can leave a property in a community better than I found it. It's not about getting every dollar out of a deal. It's not about being a slumlord. And so it's very important that the people I work with have that same commitment to that value, and also the relationships for life value. I want them to be committed to that. So I look for that commitment, and then the capacity. So what's the capacity? Like, I've learned the hard way that you want to work with the best. They're not going to cost you money, they'll make you money. So I've learned the hard way that the best is rarely the cheapest. I was like, oh, this is, you know, just like a money and sense thing. So if I work with the cheapest person, that'll be the good thing. It can be a very expensive mistake to do that. So I try to work with the best at, you know, I can at what they do. And so I look for the three seasoned people, but then I try to be that myself. And so I try to show up in that way as well, to have the character and the commitment and the capacity to do what I say I'm going to do. So I think that those things, in terms of how I show up and what I look for in relationships, that's been the cause of my greatest success. And also, when that hasn't been the case, those have been the biggest mistakes.
Mm. Can you walk us through some of those? Like, maybe what are some things that, if you could rewind the tape, that you would do differently? I want the worst one. I mean, the ugly, it's got all, I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, there's one, like, in terms of like the cheapest, I remember it was actually the first apartment we were syndicating, and we were doing these apartments in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so we have this rehab budget. And so it's like, well, let's find the most economic like contractor, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is fine, because mm-hmm. This is my budget. I'm gonna go with the cheapest person that can help, that can do this job. And so we hire the cheapest guy who does not know what he's doing. So mm-hmm. it ends up taking weeks longer than we think, and he makes such a mess. We ended up then having to hire the person we should have hired in the first place, the more expensive person, who then had to come in and fix the issues caused by the cheap guy. So, you know, that was definitely a mistake. It seemed sensible at the beginning, right? To not go with, they're like, oh, well, this person is, he's 30% less than that guy, so let's go with him. And that was a very, very expensive mistake.
Yeah.
And it costs us time. It costs us money to do that. That was one.
Yeah, but I think on the flip side, you can give yourself, speaking of grace, you can give yourself a little bit of grace in, especially, I think, you know, having one been a contractor in a previous life, paying up doesn't necessarily mean that you're also getting good.
Right. It's best is not necessarily most expensive. That's for sure.
So. Yeah, right. Using that, I mean, I can think of some guys that actually work for me right now that are relatively inexpensive, and they're amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it, but they're amazing. And I can think of some other guys that are really expensive, and I don't want them on my job.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
So what I learned, it's not about the money. What I should have done, though, is trusted and looked for the best. Right. And so my property managers were recommending the guy we ended up getting it in the end. Mm. And there's like, he's really good. He does that, you know, he knows thing, he knows buildings. So we probably should have trusted that counsel and gone in that direction versus no, you know, we'll go with the cheaper person who really didn't have the expertise that was necessary.
Right. But again, you know, we talked about this off air, but it's like, I never trust anybody that hasn't lost any money. So it's one of those things
I learned a good lesson from that. Yeah. So, we're not going to do it perfect, especially at the beginning. And sometimes you try to find the perfect person, and they'd still turn out to be not the right person.
Right.
So that can happen. That can happen. But yeah, so, but, you know, generally I think that's been that's when we've had the biggest challenges. I know, and other mistakes that I've made too has been trying to go too big too fast. Sometimes that can be an issue. So we have this one project. So we're buying these single families in Jackson, Mississippi, and you know, our partner on the ground had a certain amount of profit, but the we try to do too much too quickly. And I, you know, I was sensing that, but it can get exciting. And I've learned from my mentor, do you want to fail small? So right. Do you like just try it out, get it working, and then you grow? Or do you optimize before you maximize? So I've learned that the hard way as well. So you want
to. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I like that. Fail small.
Fail small. Fail small, fail forward. But fail small.
That's a great piece. I haven't heard that before, but yeah, that's good. Fail small. Let's talk a little bit about what types of real estate you guys are seeing opportunity in right now. Hmm. Obviously, with your hands, you know, or with being connected with a bunch of different operators around the country and just kind of seeing things where they are in this market cycle, like where do you see opportunity?
Yeah. So the past couple of years, we've been focused mostly in an industrial space.
Mm.
And, you know, late 2018, we got under contract in our apartments in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So it's Albuquerque, New Mexico, C-class. We sold those at a 4 cap, which is outrageous. And which was great as a seller. It was horrifying as a buyer. So I got really freaked out as when we sold those. I was like, wait a minute. I did not want to compete against that, right? If somebody's going to buy those for that price. Great to sell. The buy, I was like, eek. I'm not comfortable with where multifamily is going in terms of price points. So I started to, it's like, this is a seller's market. I don't like being a buyer in a seller's market. So how can I find what else can we look for? So I started getting into different asset classes and then discovered industrial. And we kind of fell into that. It was definitely not the feeding frenzy on the buyer side. And as we looked into the marketplace, it's like, oh, okay, there's an increasing need for this type of real estate. You know, there's, even as retail was suffering, online retailers, they need more and more industrial space. They need warehouses, they need data centers, they need their places that need R&D. We do have a manufacturing sector in this country. There is manufacturing facilities that are needed, food processing. So there is a need for industrial. And actually last year, industrial did the best of any asset class during COVID. But we got into it actually in the beginning of 2019. And so we've been just doubling down in industrial. And that's an asset class that I'm really liking right now.
That's interesting. I mean, there's obviously a ton of interest in the industrial asset mm-hmm. class.
Yeah.
Especially from institutional buyers. So is there a way that you guys are positioning yourself such that you can still find value?
Yeah. So what we've been doing, we have we have these partners and we're working in a pretty niche area of industrial called sale leaseback. Mm. Basically, there's a company that has a facility they're using. They want to sell it, but they still want to use it. So they sell it and they lease it right back. So, and then they become the tenant.
Right.
So why would they do that? People are like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would they do that? They do that because they need to get equity out of the property, usually.
Right.
That's why they'll do it. And then sometimes we've also had people sell because the business is being acquired by a hedge fund that wants the business, but not they want to be in the business of that business, but not the business of real estate. So right. For a variety of reasons, they'll sell. There's also tax benefits often for them to be the tenant versus the owner. So they sell it, we buy it, and we buy it with a triple net lease, 20 years. Triple net's awesome because triple net means they not only pay rent, they pay all the property taxes, pay all the insurance, and they pay all the maintenance. So if there's a toilet issue, they fix the toilet. If there's an issue with the roof, they fix the roof. If there's an issue with the foundation, they'll fix the foundation. So it's very nice from our point of view because we know what our income's going to be exactly because it's 20-year lease, built-in rent increases every year, 2% generally. And we know what our expenses are going to be. It's basically just our debt service. And so it's nice. And then what we do is in 4 to 6 years, we'll sell it to an institutional buyer, sort of a pension fund, insurance company, that kind of thing. So they will buy those deals with a good tenant, several years of good payment history, 15 to 17 years left on a lease. They'll buy those all day, every day, but they don't do the sale lease back. So that's the value add piece, just setting that up. And you know, in the big the big due diligence we have to do really is on the company, make sure that the company is super solid. But, you know, I think the youngest company we've done one of these for was 17 years old. They're well capitalized. They're just these solid companies that aren't going anywhere. And what's nice is now we're seeing their performance in this economy. We've been doing ones that are, they've been essential businesses, and a lot of them have been having their best years ever this past year. So super solid. That's what we're.
Yeah, that's a fascinating niche asset class because one, I think it's very hard to break into. You know, I've heard about it, but I also have never really even come across it. It's not like brokers are out there necessarily. Hey, I got a building for a sale lease back. That's more something where you know people.
Yeah.
That know people that are looking for this.
Yeah, our partners have been in this for decades. So.
Yeah. That's super cool. So all you guys do then is season the lease. And then you once that lease is seasoned, but yet still has acceptable term on it, you then move that off to a institutional buyer.
Yep.
It's like the easy, I'm not going to say easy, but it is the most streamlined, I think, value add probably that there is, especially on a triple net.
Yeah, it's pretty, because we don't have to do anything to the property. It's ready, right? They don't have to move in, move out. It's great.
Right. Yeah. Oh man, that's fascinating. I love that. Cause I mean, basically you guys are going to get an ACH in your account once a month and your phone will never ring.
Exactly.
Right. Brilliant.
Not nice. So especially after doing the returns for investors are pretty much identical to multifamily, or, you know, it's like usually we're like 17 to 20, 21% returns annualized, cash on cash, 8 to 10%.
That's a whole
average. Yeah, without all the moving parts. You have so many moving parts when you're trying to do a multifamily reposition. And this is like one easy tenant, one awesome tenant that does everything. It's amazing.
And that's an easy sell, I would think, to investors as well. I mean, I want to invest with you. My gosh.
Yeah, it's not hard to sell once they understand what it is. Because at first, it's like, what's a sale leaseback? So I just have to explain, like, this is what it is. It's not that hard to explain. It's just nobody's ever heard of it.
Sure.
So you have to explain, and then they have to go, oh, but you only have one tenant. Like, that's true, but let me explain what kind of tenants they are. So
you have rated tenants that have been in business for a long time with deep pockets.
Well capitalized. Yeah. They're not going anywhere.
Right. And even if they do, there's probably still quite a bit of upside left in the appreciation of the building itself.
Taking
the asset back is not even necessarily a bad thing. Maybe a hassle, but not bad.
Yeah, we buy it slightly below market. We rent it out slightly below market too. So we have built-in equity. And then we also have, you know, if we rent it out and then we rent it at market, we have room to grow. So
you're doing some really cool things.
It's pretty cool. I love it.
Yeah, I love the journey that you've been on. It's been fun just here in the last 15 or 20 minutes to really hear where you guys have gone all the way from, what was it? What did you say? Like, how do I buy a duplex, or how do I buy a quadplex?
I was trying to just get a fourplex in Los Angeles. Yeah,
a fourplex. All I want is a fourplex. And now she's like the sale lease back investor master. You know, so that's awesome. I love it. Monique, let's jump here into the final four. The first question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Yeah, so the advice that I would give is get educated. So I'm probably teaching to the choir because y'all are here. You're here listening. So you care to get educated. But I find that you're going to get an education either way, either on the front end or on the back end. It's a lot less painful if you get it on the front end. So definitely get educated, but do take action. So you want education for effective action, not, you don't want to like sit there in analysis paralysis.
Right. Education for effect. What'd you say?
Education for effective action.
That's a mouthful, but that's a good piece of advice. I like that. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Oh my gosh. I invest in myself a lot. I just came back from 4 days in Salt Lake masterminding with a bunch of seven-figure female entrepreneurs, different industries. And so I'm learning from them and what they're doing and their best practices and just supporting one another. But I definitely invest probably in the past 5 years, like over $500,000 on just personal development, but it's paid back exponentially.
That's awesome. Good for you. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
One thing I'm doing to make the world a better place. Well, I feel like my whole mission. So my mission is to help 1 million women create financial freedom through real estate investing. And so for me, that is a shortcut to changing the world, because I believe and know that when women have a little extra money and extra time, they give back. They give back to their families, they give back to their communities, they give back to the world. And so when I empower a woman, then I empower, she's going to bring her men along, her kids along, her besties, her sisters, her cousins. That's how we're wired. And so that's my way of giving back to the world.
Right. No, that's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. Monique, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
The best way is probably to go to my website, reigoddesses.com. So REI for real estate investor, goddesses.com. And there you can connect with me and find out on all the socials. And we're also at REI Goddesses on the socials too.
Awesome. Monique, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.